down because of foreign wars we wage. It's more to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men, and I won't be ruled by the Danuet. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're safer, but they don't make sense. Dangerous ones will not turn into guns. Always ask for more. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men, and I won't be ruled by the Danuet.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Jim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. All right, everybody, it is New Year's Eve, of course, and we are still wondering what the new year may have in store for us, although I'm sure a lot of us think we've got a pretty good idea. Some of us are more than happy that 2017 is coming to an end, and there are a few of us, though, that will actually be sorry, that we will regret the fact that it doesn't seem to be continuing. Why? Well, some of us had a pretty good year. There's lots of reasons to be positive about things that have happened. I mean, first of all, we did get a victory in the electorate of the White House. That is an important thing, because can you imagine what would be going on right now if we had been gifted the wonderful, wonderful present of a presidential victory for Hillary Rodham Clinton? How scary would that be? With all that having been said and done, having a just minor glitch here. Not real sure what's going on here technically. I see there is a guest in the chat room. If you can hear me, guest, please say a little something, or maybe give a wave in the chat room or something. Let me know you're there. No, there's been a lot of technical glitches with BTR, so I had a hard time myself getting signed on and listening to a few programs this past week. I did try. I'm not entirely certain if you can even hear me right now. Everything seems to be routed a different way. I see there's Mary. Hey, Mary, if you can hear me, send me a little smiley face or something in the chat room if you don't mind. I'm trying to make sure that I can, in fact, be heard. Okay, she says that she can hear me, so I guess we're good. Thanks for your assistance. So here we are. It is New Year's Eve, 2017. We have a whole new year to get started next year. And so lots of times what you'll see is it'll bring about people questioning the things that have happened the past year. Folks like to look back And then folks like to look ahead, and that's something that actually normally I do on a fairly regular basis, a week or so into the new year. Usually we'll have a show where we bring together a panel of folks to kind of showcase who we are and where we're at and all that wonderful stuff. And we'll typically take a look at specific questions, like what were the biggest stories of the past year was, and what was the most underrated stories, or at least underreported stories, things that were important enough that should have been reported more. At this point, I have not started putting together that show, but it's become a tradition. So I will start reaching out to folks next week, and we'll start putting together something, and we'll schedule it accordingly. Last year, we had so many people participate that we actually broke it down into two shows, which, you know, I can't help but be a little pleased by that. A lot of great names, Ron Edwards being among them, and Rod Eccles, and Sharon Marie Brenner, and of course, Ann Ubellis from over at Southern Sense, and Don Smith of the Don Smith Show, and Ken Crow had joined us, and a large number of other folks, and it was a great show. Josh Bernstein joined us, and I can't help but leave out some folks while I'm sitting here trying to think of it, but I certainly don't want to leave anyone out. It was a great lineup, and it worked very well. Even Ken McClellan, a.k.a. the Exceptional Conservative, joined us for a bit last year. He was a little late to the party. Underground Professor joined us. Who else? Of course, Professor the Exceptional Conservative himself a hard time for being late, but he joined us, and we had great conversations with a lot of great folks and a lot of conservative messages. But the one good thing that stood out is that even though there were a lot of conservative voices, there was also still a lot of differences. We all agreed on a lot of things. In fact, most of us were in agreement that the biggest story of last year was the election of Donald Trump. And whether you like Donald Trump personally or not, whether you're happy with Donald Trump personally or not, unless you're a rabid Democrat win at all costs and you don't care about the country, you just care about winning elections, you have to be happy that Hillary Rodham Clinton was not elected president. You have to be, because imagine the disaster it would have been. We still have questions up in the air about whether or not the Hillary email scandal should be further looked into. To me, there's no question. It should be. The woman committed a crime. And based on the information we're getting about how the Justice Department was being run, thanks to the Mueller investigation of all things, it's become painfully clear. It's become painfully obvious that the Justice Department had made up their mind about Hillary Clinton well before the investigation had been concluded. So there needs to be an honest and legitimate investigation, because here's the problem. The statutes that were violated in the handling of classified materials, do not require, intent. So the intent, which in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure this is the case, and I know a lot of people look at this and come to the same conclusion, the intent of using the private server was so she could operate her pay-to-play operations, utilizing the State Department as her GoFundMe page for the Clinton Foundation, which in turn is the Clinton Family Slush Fund. There's no question in my mind that that is the case. You're going to have to prove to me otherwise if that's not. Only there is no proof, there is no evidence, there is no consideration whatsoever, one way or the other, whether or not that that's the case, because there's been no actual investigation. And part of the reason there's not been an investigation is because they don't want to besmirch Barack Hussein Allahu Akbar Obama. Mary in the chat room says that she thinks that they all do it, which is why no investigation. And you know what? You may be right. I mean, there have been other occasions. Other people have talked about it. Lots of people have in fact been talked about having utilized private servers for their communications while they've been in position in the State Department. However, there is supposed to be a separation between what is and isn't public business. And I think even some of the more shady characters, like former presidential candidate and Senator John Kerry, who took Hillary's place in the State Department when Hillary took her departure so that she could start building her campaign. I think even he made an effort to try and keep official stuff separate from personal stuff. Now, that doesn't mean that they were perfect in that effort, and it doesn't even mean that I'm correct. I could be completely off base, and you could be completely right that they all could be doing this since our email was first invented. Who knows? The thing is, there's no investigation, at least none that's been made public. I think the Mueller investigation has certainly brought forth the question, should Hillary Rodham Clinton have a new investigation? And should we get to the bottom of it? Because, again, I'll point out, and I know you guys are getting tired of hearing me say this, but I will point out, plain and simple, the statute in question does not require intent. Intent should have never been a factor. And I'm sorry, what the former FBI director said in his very public statement that was supposed to be an explanation of why there would be no criminal charges pursued against Hillary Clinton on the matter, was very carefully worded, very specifically laid out so that it sounds as though intent is important. But intent is not important when it comes to this statute. If it was, you could never get a conviction on it because very few people actually release classified information or mishandle classified information with the intent of causing harm to the country. Now, some people do. That's called espionage. They're spies. They're people that take money because of their access. And there are people who simply want to try to cause trouble. You know, they just think that what the government's doing wrong, so they're going to release classified information, even if it puts soldiers and intelligent operatives in harm's way, because it's important that people know. You know, and I have a lot more respect for those kind of whistleblowers if they stand up and then they're willing to take the consequences, knowing they've broken the law, stand up and face the charges. You stand up and have your day in court, and if you go to prison, then go to prison instead of running off to Russia and hiding out, Mr. Snowden. You know, there's a difference between being an honest-to-goodness whistleblower who believes in what you're doing and someone who's trying to hide. What was your intent? Your intent there is to cause trouble, and that intent is a violation of the law, clearly. But the way the law is laid out, there is absolutely, positively no distinction between intention. If you mishandled classified information, you mishandled classified information, period. Quick shout out to Bob Evers, who's joined us in the chat room. Good to see you, Bob. Now, it's interesting that we have gotten a better picture of how the Justice Department was being run during the Obama years. And then as we made this transition and we had people left over, so many leftovers, you know, we still have a lot of positions that have yet to be filled in this case, and we have a ton of people, especially bureaucrats, who should be above the body politic, should be. But we know that these bureaucratic offices, especially in the IRS and in the Justice Departments in particular, have been weaponized. They have been turned into another tool at the disposal of the party in power. And despite what a lot of people have to say, I think Donald Trump has legitimately made an effort to reverse that. First, in not immediately firing all these people and trying to appoint his own people, but also in so much as allowing certain things to continue that he doesn't have to allow. I do think that we've also seen that effort thanks to Jeff Sessions, who did not have to recuse himself of the Russia-Trump collusion investigation in the first place, but he did, because in his mind, it raised the question of the appearance of impropriety. And when you're talking about the appearance of impropriety, that used to be an important factor. That used to be something that was highly sought after by both political parties. Now, we've talked a multitude of times about how now it seems like the Republican side of the street is the only side that's concerned about how things appear. The Democrats just want to win. They don't care. They don't even care that their policies are destructive. Most of them, actually, they are very much aware that they're destructive, and that's the intent. Now, there are still some people running around as Democrats that have still bought into the smoke and mirrors that we're just trying to help the people, and we're trying to keep big business from running everything and taking advantage of the little guy. There are folks that believe that, that are currently holding public office. Some of them, I would also imagine, are the same type of office holders that believe if you put too many people on an island, it might tip over. Or, you know, things like that. People that believe that somehow it's a bad thing if there's a tax break. Somehow it's going to hurt the little guy, even if it's, well, if it only been big business that had gotten the tax break. Well, then that means the little guy has to pick up that. No, it means prices just got cheaper. Even if prices don't lower immediately, profit margins went up, so more jobs just got created. Or better pay at those companies just got created, or a new round of bonuses. It's good for the people who are working, and it creates more opportunities for people to work. And again, that kind of goes against the Democrat plan. Again, now I'm talking Democrat. So I point out some Democrats simply don't know any better, and they don't. They've been victims of the same public school system that the progressives have taken control of for a while. They've fallen victim to the indoctrination that takes place in these public schools. And they themselves have bought in completely and totally because that's all they were ever taught. Lots of them don't even understand. We do not even elect people who have run businesses anymore. We elect people who have been lawyers. And in lots of occasions, you see folks that leave law school and go directly into running for a political office, spending no time even working the job of being a lawyer, or spending very little time. So there's very little understanding about how the world outside of the government works. And let's make no mistake, boys and girls, the world inside the government does not work like the rest of the world does. No results are required. Only intentions matter. Sounds an awful lot like everybody gets a participation trophy, right? You tried to do something good, so that's really all that matters. No. What matters is results. And the progressives, the leftists, who have claimed that mantle of progressivism, they know full well that these policies are destructive. They know full well that these policies are meant and designed specifically to destroy the Constitution, because the Constitution is the single greatest obstacle to them getting their way, which is statists run the world. They want everyone to be a statist. And that's why the biggest enemy that they face is the conservative patriot. That's why the IRS got weaponized against Tea Party organizations. That's why the Justice Department got weaponized and going after ranchers as opposed to going after new Black Panther members who were engaged heavily in voter intimidation. Now, we have globalists that are on the march. We have leftists that want to destroy the country. We have globalists that want the UN to be the ultimate source of authority. They're working towards a one world government. And eventually we will have that. And I don't say that because that's what I'm rooting for. I don't say that because I'm not fighting against it. I don't say that because I don't believe in the sovereignty, not only of this nation, but every other nation. But I say that because of biblical prophecy. And I don't want to take you to church today, boys and girls, but at the end of the day, the Bible is the one place of prophecy that I've seen that has yet to be wrong. I'm a firm believer. I'm a strong Christian. Or at least I like to think so. Yeah, I guess most folks like to think so. But biblical prophecy is still prophecy. And in this new age, you have certain spiritualists that are looking to find other prophets. And whether you're looking at conversations from Edgar Cayce all the way up to some swami who's trying to read tea leaves, whatever it is, if you're willing to believe into that, I don't see why. Yeah, Bob, I don't know what it is. It's something to do on my end, some type of technical issue. It goes in and out. But then if you go back and listen to the audio in the archives, it's usually good. Mary, well, actually, she just told you in the chat room. Mary calls in and listens online, and evidently it's fine there. So I don't understand. Because obviously, if they're getting it at the switchboard well enough that you can listen live, on the switchboard, but you're still not hearing it on the rebroadcast that way. I've kept thinking that it has to be on my end, and somewhere I think maybe there is a setting connection that's not optimized or something. But for whatever reason, I do tend to think that if you can hear me fine by calling in, but you can't hear me fine by listening, that there must be some kind of connection there at the switchboard that's at issue. Just taking care of some live listening business. And by the way, if you're not listening live, you're missing out on conversations in the chat room. When a few more folks get here, and there will be a few more folks later, I'm sure. Once it really gets hopping, once the chat room gets full, you're missing out on some great conversations. So if you do listen to this show after the fact, if you're listening in archives, if you're listening over at iTunes, or at Stitcher.com or TuneIn.com or a million other places that you can listen to the show afterwards, you really should try listening live. Because even though we have this intermittent broadcast issue that I'm still trying to get to the bottom of and have been for a while now, it actually started before I got this new equipment I've been utilizing. So when I got the new equipment, that's when I first got recorded. I thought maybe it had something to do with that. But as it turned out, it had started even before that. So I don't know. So far, BTR keeps telling me there isn't a problem. So, I don't know. I have considered maybe just taking the broadcast back over to Spreaker. But then the chat rooms don't work as well. And some of you guys have told me, Mary being one of them, early on when I was doing the show back and forth, I would do one show a week here at BTR and then three shows a week at Spreaker for a bit. I was doing like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday thing at Spreaker, and then a Sunday show here. Mary was one of the folks that said she had a harder time getting it to work over there because she was trying to follow the show. And I appreciate that, by the way, Mary. That was a while back now. But, you know, the audio issues have been fixed over there, and they've changed some of the apps, though, and I was trying to work some of that. Anyway, let's get back to the show. So here's the thing. That's one of the good things that may come in the new year. We may finally see somebody go after Hillary Clinton, because I do think that the Democratic Party is pretty well done with the Clintons at this point. Oh, that's not a problem, Bob. Anytime that you're in the chat room and you want to give me some feedback that's helpful, I always appreciate it. And it's not an interruption as far as I'm concerned. You're trying to help, and I appreciate help. We're looking at this, and you know, there's just so many things going on. Will Hillary Clinton face some kind of justice finally? Will she face a repercussion for her actions? We know she's not going to answer to anything that happened with Benghazi. Nobody has the political will to open up that can of worms and actually say, okay, here's what we need. And maybe it has to do with classified information there. But everybody knows now. Everybody and their grandmother is aware that classified information was mishandled. And it's not even just the issue of her using the private server anymore. The second investigators discovered some of these emails that had been intended for Uma Albadine and had been copied by Carlos Danger, the Anthony Weiner. Once Anthony Weiner had some of those emails on his laptop, then we have a whole new level of breach and a whole new level of mishandling. And unfortunately, this was discovered. Some of these emails took place, were transferred after he had been removed from office. So now he's no longer even under the same expectations of trust. Not that you should have ever trusted Anthony Weiner, unless you were making the statement, Anthony, are you a pervert? If he says yes, then you can trust him on that. He's proven that quite well. So Carlos Danger had some of these emails. At that point, that's a whole new level of issue. And that's exactly why this law exists. You need to be careful with classified information. It's not classified for no reason. Now, sometimes it's classified for reasons that the general public would find shady. Sometimes it is just covering their own backside. But some of this classified information is classified simply because general public consumption of this information could put intelligent operatives or military personnel in harm's way unnecessarily. It's important to understand why things get classified. So it's important to understand this is a serious crime. And when you have General Petraeus, going back to my point earlier about how intent is not applicable here, General Petraeus obviously didn't intend for anything negative to happen with the information he gave via pillow talk or whatever to this slash mistress slash autobiographer that he was working with. And she had military rank. She had military classification. She didn't have the highest level of clearance, but she had military clearance. And there's never really been shown that she didn't have clearance to have the information that he shared. But the point of the matter was, there is still a procedure and a proper procedure that must be followed in the dissemination and the reveal of classified information. It's the whole thing going back to the argument about the Justice Department not wanting to turn over all the documentation that Senator Nunes is wanting. He's moving forward filing with contempt of Congress charges. Now, maybe that'll motivate them enough to turn over some more of this information. But the bottom line is, this particular committee has every legal right to see every single document that the Justice Department currently has. They do not have a right to withhold it. However, if it is classified to a certain level, they simply need to follow a procedure to gain access to these documents. They may not be able to go over them publicly. Quick shout out to Kel, who's joined us in the chat room. Hey, Kel, glad to have you here. Happy New Year. Christmas was merry for everyone in the chat room. And I hope everybody has a very prosperous New Year. 25 tries to get it. What is it, guys? What has been going on with BTR this past week? Because I know it's not just me. I've seen a lot of other people having trouble. I could not get signed on. I was trying to listen to Annie's show this past week. In fact, Kel, you were there for a bit, and I kept trying to sign in. It kept bumping me out. It kept freezing it. Did everything I could on this end. Don't know. Seen other people still having trouble getting signed in. I guess the BTR engineers are enjoying their vacation because they don't seem to be getting much fits. But anyway. So this committee, it has every right, it has all the authority in the world to see this information, even the classified parts of it. Although I'm not certain how much classified intel the Justice Department should be handling, because we're not talking about the intelligence committees. We're talking about the Justice Department. They're not supposed to be involved with things that would require national security. They're supposed to be trying to provide protections to citizens and pursuing criminal investigations. That's what they're supposed to be doing. So how sensitive is this material actually? But even if you have classified information, this particular committee has every right to see it. Anyway, it's part of where we're moving to. And this year looks to be a really good year moving forward. Trump got the tax deal passed. So congratulations. It's still not a perfect tax deal, but it's the best change. It's the best reform we have seen moving forward. So it'll be great. And of course, you still have a lot of folks, especially like the New York, some of the folks in New York, the politicians there, the New York governor in particular, crying and whining about it because it puts new pressure on them because they have some of the highest property rates in the country. So they have some of the highest property taxes. Well, let's take a good look at New York, especially in New York City itself. Some of the highest tax rates in the world. And it's at the state and local levels. And it's not so much the federal level. So the feds did take away a deduction, which is intended to be an offset towards the money they won't be receiving. Now, whenever you hear politicians start talking about income loss because of a tax cut, you know they've been in D.C. too long. Or at this at your state capital too long, or even on your city council too long. Because what that means, and you see it in very simple language, I've seen a lot of people with R's at the end of the name that have started talking like this, which concerns me deeply. It means they've bought into the fact that all the money in the world is really theirs, and you should just be happy they let you keep any of it. Tax cuts are a great opportunity to put more money in the hands of the people who've actually earned it, period. They need to balance budgets. They need offsets for the spending. What they need to do is start cutting the budget. No. They don't want to do that. That's going to hurt too much. But what this is going to do, this reducing, they've done away with the property tax break. It means in those higher places, suddenly they're not going to get that offset at the federal level, and those folks are going to end up paying a little more in taxes. So those folks are going to start getting angry. What the Democrats are trying to do in this case is they're trying to flip it around and make sure that those people are angry at the Republicans for having done this. And they have to be very proactive with this because the last thing they want you to do is to sit there and think about, well, why are my property taxes so high in the first place? Why should I have to have a break at the federal level? It's not the feds that are actually charging me this property tax. You know, what's the insane thing here? The insane thing is that my property taxes are so high, period. That has to be addressed at the local level. That has to be addressed by the philosophy and the mindset of the Democratic Party, of the what's yours is really ours. Shut up, don't ask for any of it back. What's yours is ours. Our money is our money. Yeah, we'll let you keep some of it, but just keep giving us our money and hush. That's the mindset. So what happens next? What about the wall? Are we going to see action on the wall? First of all, one of the other bigger things that Donald Trump did absolutely perfectly right this last year is he moved the whole DACA argument, the whole Dreamer argument, back into the hands of the legislature, which is where it should be from the beginning. Now, I'm not big pro giving the Dreamers a break. I do understand that some of these kids legitimately were just drug here and have tried to make a life here and know nothing about the country that their parents drug them here from. And I can feel some sympathy for that. I really do. I can feel sympathetic. I can feel empathetic. But I still don't think that that makes it okay. If you're here illegally, whether it was through your own actions or someone else's, you're still here illegally, and you need to do something to get your presence here legal. Now, if Congress wants to create some kind of legislature, wants to pass some kind of a law, that will allow folks who were brought here by their parents a legal outlet without having to leave the country. You know, depending on how it's worded, I don't necessarily oppose that. Now, I'm not necessarily for it. Again, it's really going to depend on how it's written and what gets signed. But what I love is right now, Donald Trump is saying, look, DACA's in your hands, where it should be. Constitutionally speaking, that should have been on you. Barack Hussein, Allahu Akbar, Obama should have never written an executive order that covered DACA, that tried to establish it. And he certainly never should have been allowed to have it treated as if it was law. Congress should have immediately stepped in and put the kibosh on it. Should have. No, they didn't. But Donald Trump did the right thing. He ends that. And proving that he's not a hard case on the issue and that he's certainly not racist, like the Democrats keep trying to say, he gives them so much time before they're going to start enforcing the laws again. Says, look, you have X number of days to fix this. It's on you. I'm going to give you every opportunity. But, and here's where his business mind kicks in, if you want me to sign it into law, you're going to have to fund the wall. Now, if he sticks to that, that'll be fantastic. But if he sticks to it, we're not going to see funding for the wall, and we're not going to see DACA passed. And there's two reasons for that. Now, a lot of people seem to think that, well, the Democrats have to do that. The Democrats have to do it. No. The Democrats don't really care about these immigrant children. They don't care about these kids that were dragged across the border by their parents illegally. They like to pretend like they care. How many times have we had this very conversation? The Democrats don't really care. They just pretend to. Who's the real racist in the room? If you have a Democrat and a Republican side by side, well, it could be both of them. But if you have a progressive, if you have a leftist, and then you have a conservative in the room, odds are much higher that if only one of them is a racist, that it's going to be the leftist. Because leftists try to make everything about race. You can't possibly make everything about race unless race matters to you. For the people that race doesn't matter to you, then you're not concerned about it. You don't see racism every time you look around. You don't see microaggressions because somebody said, hey, I'd like a taco. You don't see microaggressions because some white kid has corn rolls. You see poor judgment and taste because I think the corn roll look is atrocious on anybody. But you've got the cultural appropriations going on. Okay, thank you for your commenting, social justice warrior. Now go back to your safe space. The Democrats don't care. What the Democrats want to do is have the issue. They will stand up and say, we couldn't fund the wall because that would have been racist. And so because we couldn't fund the wall, we couldn't get enough power to overturn the veto. Now, I've heard a lot of people making predictions, and they're thinking that, hey, guess what? Even my friend Ken Crow, he released a piece. The Rat Lobster Hip Hop. Sorry, folks, that's something in the chat room. Again, pointing out why you should be in the chat room listening live. They're going to stand up and say, it would have been a bigger betrayal to all of you. It would have been far more racist if we'd went along with Donald Trump's racist objective of funding the wall. Like I said, friend Ken Crow, he put out a piece today. He put out a piece today making some guesses and claims. And one of his predictions for the coming year is that Donald Trump will get funding for the wall. If he gets funding for the wall, it's not going to be because of DACA, and it's not going to be because of any Democrats. I really, really hope he does get funding for the wall because the wall has already been funded before under a previous administration. So where'd the money go? Yeah, it got wasted and probably sent to Iran. Part of the big Iran bribe to help make sure that they become a nuclear power. Once again, thank you, Barack Hussein Akbar Obama. Mary says pockets. So that's where the money went, folks, in people's pockets. You know what? I don't doubt that either. Question is, whose pockets? And for what purpose. But yeah, again, because we don't have access to that information, we can only speculate. And unfortunately, when you can only speculate, you can't really hold people accountable, can you? I mentioned Iran. I'll come back to Iran in a little bit, because one of the biggest stories going on right now is these protests. Again, for the second time in recent history, the people of Iran are rioting on the streets. Last time, they had hoped that Barack Obama would help them. Obviously, they didn't have a clue. Like a lot of Americans who voted for him, didn't have a clue who Barack Hussein Ali Akbar Obama really is. Donald Trump is a different creature. This could get interesting. This could be one of those new things that we take a look at in the coming year that could be very interesting. But at the end of the day, digressing back to my previous point, I don't see DACA reform happening. And I think it's a good thing. Because again, like I said, I can sympathize for somebody that gets drugged here with no choice in the matter, whose entire life has been here and they've tried to do the right thing. I can sympathize. And it would be great if Congress could write a reasonable and respectful law allowing these kids to get some kind of legal status here, since it was completely out of their hands. It would be great. But it would also require a multitude of stipulations. If you've been in trouble with the law, even if it was just being picked up drunk at a party or something, usual kid, teenager stuff, sorry, you've lost your chance. You have to be able to prove that you're willing to be a positive and productive member of our society. You have to prove that, as far as you're concerned, you are an American. And if you can do that and you can stand up to a high standard, and it's a shame because there are a lot of people who are no question about their citizenship here that aren't willing to live to that same high standard. But if you can obtain that high standard, then in my opinion, you should be allowed to have your shot. It's that simple. But if you're going to tie funding to the wall to this, it's not going to happen. The Democrats will stop it. The squishy Republicans will stop it. I mean, Susan Collins and Pocahontas and, of course, fine Senator in Arizona, Mr. John McCain, will all stand up in opposition to it. And they will make that claim. They will try to make this a midterm election issue, because they want the issue more than they want to solve the problem. This is the problem with party politics. This is why the founders didn't want party politics. The earliest of the founders, George Washington, famously spoke out, party politics is bad. And we see the results of it now, because we've broken down to essentially two primary parties that have all the power. And for them, it's more about who wins an election than who's doing the people's business. It's more about how do you get a victory than it is about what changes can you make? Can we do the right thing? Can we do the hard thing? And that's what's missing in our government right now. Donald Trump, I think, you know, he's kind of all over the place with this. I mean, I'm not a huge Trump fan, but at the same time, I'm not a never Trumper. I see, in fact, I'm kind of on par with Ben Shapiro on this one. I see Trump do good things. I see Trump do bad things. And sometimes I see Trump do bad things, and then I see him fix them. Like his dragging his feet on recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. There was an announcement several months ago that they were going to postpone it. And that to me felt like he was breaking a campaign promise. But just recently he fixed that, and congratulations, stood up to the whole world in the process. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you for doing the right thing. Thank you for recognizing the fact that Israel is a sovereign nation and has the same right to determine its capital as any other country in the world. Now it's time for the rest of the world to stop being crybabies and recognize the same thing. If this had been done a long time ago, we could have been over this issue instead of acting like now this is the powder keg that's going to destroy the world. It's not going to destroy the world. We're going to be fine. It's a good thing. So we got these really good things going on, but you know, the social justice warriors are not going to back off. The Democrats are not going to back off. The Democrats, they have their strings pulled by the leftists. The leftists are firmly in charge of where the dollars come from. People like George Soros, for example, they're running the show. George Soros may be the most dangerous man on the planet. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he looks an awful lot like the Emperor from the original Star Wars trilogy. In fact, every time I see him, I kind of hear the music playing in the background. Dun, 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 dun. You know, it was the Darth Vader music, but I still get that with George Soros. So where do we go from here? I don't think we see DACA get passed. I don't think we see funding for the wall, because we have too many squishy Republicans and they're too scared of being called racist. That, for whatever reason, is still holding some power in the political circles. For the folks that are trapped inside the Beltway, they can't get outside of the Beltway long enough to realize that the rest of the country doesn't see it that way. In those liberal bastages, if you're in New York City, if you're in Seattle, Washington, if you're in Houston, Texas, maybe you step outside of Houston, forget it. But if you're in those liberal bastage cities, those little places where leftism is the predominant thought, then it's real easy to see how you may not want to take a risk. But you step outside of those areas, guess what? There's a reason why places like Ohio voted for Trump. Michigan, Pennsylvania, they voted for Trump. Because number one, those people are starting to realize that the Democratic Party isn't about the people. It's just another socialist lie. And when we get down to it, socialism doesn't work. And there are enough real Americans left that recognize that. Even the ones who haven't been taught any better have taken the time, thanks to the internet, to do some research. When I tell you, don't take my word for it, do your own research, I mean it. I want you to do your own research. That's why in the past, a very long time ago, I've done entire shows that were essentially fake news shows. This was before the term fake news existed. But I did it to test the audience, to see who would say what. And thankfully, most of you guys, especially the regulars, you not only called me out on it, but you called me out on it quick. You know. But not everybody does. I mean, we've seen how many man on the street segments on these different shows where they're interviewing people on college campuses or interviewing people just walking around, or they don't even know how many original colonies there were, or don't have any idea how many stars are on the American flag. Simple, basic, first grade information that people just walking around with no clue about. That's why news media sources, air quotes around news, like MSNBC, gets the opportunity. Yes, sir, Bob, you are correct. And by the way, if you're just listening and wondering what Bob said, that's happening in the chat room. You should join if you want to. When you're talking about MSNBC and CBS and these other news organizations, CNN, they have been able to get away with making some of the most outrageous statements, and sometimes intentionally, quick shout out to Bigfoot who's joined us in the chat room, sometimes intentionally telling you things that they know are incorrect because they know it will get the people that are watching riled up. And they know that most likely they're not going to do any fact-checking. Most likely what they're going to do is take them at their word because it's the news, right? They trust the news. Why shouldn't they? Their teachers in school or their professors in college are telling them the same thing. Why shouldn't they believe them? They won't fact-check them. But then they will turn around, and when somebody like a Sean Hannity or a Rush Limbaugh says a simple matter of fact, I don't know, let's say a recent story, that Jerusalem is actually the capital of Israel. suddenly they freak out. They lose their minds. How dare you say that? Well, because it's a fact. Check it out for yourself. And some of these people in some of these states had done that, and they've started to realize, you know, socialism, not so great. Unfortunately, a lot of the college-age kids and younger still haven't bought into that. They haven't done that research yet. They're still being hammered about how great socialism is. Every opportunity that somebody gets the chance to say it, but it's about the community. It takes a village. We should share our resources. And you know what? Communities should share their resources. Communities should be willing to help one another out. But the government shouldn't be based on that concept. You should be willing to share what you're willing to share, and you should have the right to make those determinations. If you want to give every last penny you have away, you should be free to do it. But you shouldn't have somebody standing there with a gun making you do it. If you want to give your property away to somebody, heaven help you why you ever would, because chances are you worked hard to get it. But if you wanted to do that, it should be your choice, not the government's choice. And the sad, sad truth about socialism is it almost inevitably leads to communism, which means that your property gets taken away from you anyway. Government owns everything. They decide for you. But you still have people like Van Jones out there telling these kids, well, no, the reason socialism has never worked, the reason communism doesn't work is because it's never been tried the right way. It doesn't work because of human nature. It doesn't work because of corruption. Even the best of people can be corrupted. That's why I say when you look at somebody like a Ted Cruz, when you look at somebody like a Trey Gowdy, the longer they're in those positions, when you look at a Louis Gohmert, when you look at a Mike Lee, these people, these are guys that have done a very good job of standing on principle and holding the line and voting and publicly expressing why they've done it. I'll even give Rand Paul a shout out on that because he does typically stand on his principles. His principles are, he's still mostly libertarian like his dad, but he's a little more to the conservative side than true libertarian. But these guys, they stand on their principles even when it's bucking their own party. They stand on their principles. And that is a good, that's what more people should do. And if more people did that, fewer of these bad laws would get passed because they would all be arguing and debating them. They'd be standing on the principles, and they would vote their conscience instead of voting the party line. When was the last time Democrats voted their conscience? Some of you, I'm sure, right now are thinking out loud, Tim, what makes you think these Democrats even have a conscience? I don't know. That's a good point. Obviously, some of them do not. When you're looking at Harry Reid, lifelong Mormon, still supports abortion. They vote due to blackmail. Well, yeah, but some of them I'm sure do. And some of it is because they've got something over them. Some of it is extortion. Hey, would you like to keep your seat on that committee? Yeah, and again, that goes back to the real problem with party politics, when it's all about winning for the party as opposed to doing the people's business. Ends justify the means. That's the problem with all leftists. Actual, honest-to-goodness conservatives don't think that way. So, when you have like Harry Reid, a Mormon, you have like John Kerry, a Catholic, and isn't Nancy Pelosi Catholic too, I think? You have these folks that are, they're willing to vote to protect abortion. In fact, they're even willing to vote to fund abortion. But shouldn't be permitted under their claimed spiritual beliefs. I mean, if you're Catholic, abortion is one of the most abominable acts on the planet. So how can you be Catholic and be okay with voting for abortion? We're going to protect it. It's about women's rights. You're obviously not voting your conscience. Stand on a principle. it doesn't matter when or what your principle is or may be, stand on your principle. If you are freaking Bernie Sanders, and I've mentioned this during the campaign, you know, I can't stand it. I think he's as wrong as possible, but I will give kudos to the fact that Bernie Sanders stood on the principle that he is a socialist and was willing to be open about it and tell the world. So there it is. Give a kudo to Bernie Sanders. Now, the only kudo he gets is the fact that he's willing to stand on a principle. More people should. Quick shout out to Alaskan COG, child of God, glad to have you with us. Been a little while since I've seen you, COG. Glad to have you back in the chat room. Of course, Mary says Catholics aren't conservative. And in a lot of cases, you're right. But it still comes down to the fact that in the Catholic belief system, abortion is wrong. You know, the sanctity of life is utmost for most Christian faith. I don't know of a Christian denomination that doesn't put the sanctity of life as being one of the primary focal points. Life is sacred. Life is a gift from the Almighty and should be treated as such. That's why thou shalt not kill is kind of specifically mentioned, along with a few others. Certainly wouldn't expect Democrats to vote along their religious views all the way down there, but except what they do in our faith with Muslims. Well, you know, the Muslim faith is a little different. It's very liberal in its mindset. Leftist, I shouldn't say liberal, I should say leftist. Leftist mindset is one of the ends justifying the means. And when you're not the majority power, you whine about being a victim. And then once you're even up, you whine about inclusivity. And then once you have a majority, and you will always get the majority if you follow this game plan, you then institute your own rules and you don't give a rat's backside about the other minorities. And I'm sure Kel can attest that that is exactly how the current Islamic invasions are taking place. The civilizational jihad being the proper term that I was struggling to try and think of a second ago. That is how civilizational jihad is done. We've seen it taking place in France, in Germany, in England, and it's happening here in the States. It's happening up in Canada. What is it that we have to look forward to next year as far as that's concerned? I mean, we're here on New Year's Eve. We're looking back at last year. We're looking forward to next year. We're hoping for brighter things and better things. But some of the things we're going to have to watch out for are the continuing culture war. So other than wishing you all a happy new year and thanking you all for being here, we'll take a look at a couple of those social justice stories here in the second hour. But before we do that, let me go ahead and take a little break here where we will in fact play the Edwards Notebook and then the songs and stories for soldiers, veterans tip of the day. Actually, I'm going to play two Edwards notebooks. I'm going to play the old DACA notebook just because of my predictions on how DACA is going to go. And then we'll play the December 8th notebook as well. Then we'll do songs and stories. So stay with me as I catch my breath, get a little fluid on the back of my throat, and then we will all get back to it. Thanks for being here. Now I'll be right back.
How moronic thinking can destroy a great nation. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, are leftists, career politicians like way out Maxine Waters, Chucky Schumer, and Representative Lee of California actually out of their natural minds or conscientiously in favor of a philosophical base that is destructive to our republic? Take DACA or the DREAM Act, for example. Thousands and thousands of illegal immigrants brought their children into our republic.
I'm in America.
Now there are at least 800,000 offspring, many of who are full-grown adults of up to 31 years of age. Considering the awful unemployment levels among young black American-born men and Hispanics, I find it very interesting that many leftist politicians and complaining academic professors are angry because the Dreamers may have to obey the law and give up jobs they are taking from American youths who need to find employment. Those of the moronic left or ridiculous rhino ranks in the legislative branch should themselves be booted out of office and replaced with statesmen and women who will govern on behalf of our republic and will support efforts to convince other nations to adopt free market economics and stop filling our nation with American haters who have no intention of becoming Americans. I'm Ron Edwards.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
President Trump has directed the United States to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, despite what the Dragon Media and others may proclaim. Jerusalem is the eternal capital of Israel. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, the city of Jerusalem was first designated Israel's capital over 3,000 years ago by King David, as described in 2 Samuel in the Bible. Following King David, his son Solomon built the Holy Temple and installed the Ark of the Covenant there. Ever since the days of King David, the Jews have faced Jerusalem in their daily prayers. It is the center of Jewish faith and the core of Jewish history, which predates by over a millennium the Islamic persuasion. Jerusalem is where the Knesset governing body is housed, and it doesn't make sense for the United States to maintain its embassy 60 miles away in Tel Aviv. I believe that despite the violent protests and the numerous nations around the world who have denounced President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, it will ultimately bode well for both the United States and Israel. After all, Israel is a sovereign nation with the right to choose its capital, and likewise, the U.S. is a sovereign nation with the right to choose where to place our U.S. embassies. God bless both Israel and the United States of America. I'm Ron Edwards.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
This is Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. The holiday season can be very difficult for a lot of people, especially veterans. They may be alone or estranged from their families. Here's your Veterans Tip of the Day. If you don't belong to a veteran service organization like the American Legion or the Disabled Veterans or Veterans of Foreign War, join it. You'll meet new friends, and next time, your holiday season will be full of cheer. This has been Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. Dan Perkins here for Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your Veterans Tip of the Day. Did you know that the suicide rate for women vets is 12 times that of their sisters in civilian life? Did you know that 1 in 4 women vets feel uncomfortable about talking to people about their mental health issues? Did you know almost 600,000 women vets in America are suffering from PTSD? It's time to help. It's time for all of us to encourage our sisters, mothers, and wives to get help by contacting their local VA hospital, clinic, or community-based health care center. So if you know a woman vet that is suffering, go to va.gov and find their nearest VA facility. This has been Dan Perkins of SongsAndStoriesForSoldiers.us with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and I have a caller who has her hand. Oh, well, actually, they dropped off. I guess we will kind of watch and see if they pop back on or not. But thanks for staying with me through the break. Certainly appreciate it. Obviously, you know, we have a lot of things that we can be looking forward to in the upcoming year. But some of the things that we'll have to kind of keep an eye out on also comes back to a few simple things, that the culture war. We talk about the culture war quite a bit here. In fact, a lot of the stories that I cover tend to be culture war stories. Didn't used to be that way. I used to focus on policy. And there's a big difference between policy and culture war stories. Culture war stories, lots of times, can be relatively insignificant. Some of them I ignore because everything from freaking Kwanzaa and how it's not real, but we're still supposed to treat it as being real, is a culture war story. Roseanne Barr getting into it on TV with a conservative is a culture war story, but Roseanne doesn't necessarily rise to that level. Rosie O'Donnell trying to bribe Jeff Flake and Susan Collins over the tax bill. That's a culture war story. Now, technically, that's a crime story, too, because bribery is illegal, and she did legitimately try to bribe two U.S. senators. But regardless of all of that, culture war stories are still important because it tells you where the culture or our nation is, where our people are going, and to really try to be mindful of. These are the things that we're fighting against because this is the underlying thing that lets the leftists win. So I have went away from policy, although it wasn't my, I did not intend to go away from policy. I think good policy is still what we should be fighting for. You can't make a stronger statement for conservatism in government than to actually pass good, strong, conservative policies, because everyone benefits from them. Now, we're told that they don't. We're told that conservative policies hurt the poor. And legitimately, there are people right now today that are receiving a bunch of government goodies that should have never received them, who would be hurt by losing them. Now, that's true. And there's nothing you can do to change it. But the fact of the matter is, they should have never gotten it in the first place. And had they not received it, they would have most likely found the kind of assistance they needed from legitimate sources, you know, charities and community groups. To sit back and say that conservatives are heartless creatures is, of course, part of how the left tries to demonize everyone with a conservative mindset. But at the end of the day, they're the heartless creatures because they're trying to implant this idea that you can't survive without government. Therefore, you can't survive without them. Therefore, it's up to them to take care of you. You shouldn't have to take care of yourself.
Thank you. All right. How about now? Can you guys hear me now? Anybody else there? Hello, hello, hello. Da, 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 da. Hello. Can anybody hear me? Can anybody hear me now? Tim can hear. Okay. All right. Good. Finally. Yeah, I was, I was blasting away about this, couple of, social justice stories here, and, had no idea that anything had even went wrong, and now I'm back. So, so the volume is low. Okay. Well, unfortunately, there's not much I can do about that at this point. I had to, change how I called in, to finally get back on. And now there's not hardly, not hardly any time to really do much of anything, left. Sheesh. Can't believe this. Thank you, Mary, for, sending me the message to let me know something was going on. Obviously I did not come back from, the top of the hour break. And that is very disappointing to me. So I was really starting to get on a bit of a roll. this was a part of the show you guys had been waiting for, I promise. And it was nearly 30 minutes before I knew anything was going on. This is insane. Kel, you sent me a Skype note. Good. I just went over to Skype to call in via Skype, and that's actually how I'm in, which is weird because Skype is usually where I have the most issues. In fact, I was trying once again the Direct Connect initially. Usually when Direct Connect messes up on me, though, it usually just kind of, it pulls its stuff and it kind of just freezes up the whole freaking keyboard, and I, as far as trying to access the switchboard, and I can't do much of anything. Thank you guys for staying around and waiting and being patient. And I do not know what that was about, but I appreciate it. And hopefully when BTR does its editing, it'll take all that dead air off without me having to worry about any of it. Yeah, only 40 minutes. Tell me about it. 40 freaking minutes, just dead air. But you guys, you all are still here. And thank you for that. That means a lot to me. I really do appreciate it. I know you guys kept yourselves company. and some great conversation going on in the chat room while I was trying to get back in. But I had no idea that I was not on the air. So again, I apologize. And hopefully we won't have to worry about that again. Wow. Let me try to do the abridged versions here because I do want to try and get at least a couple of these stories. I was about to switch over to the third story when I've got this first message. But I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys didn't hear anything after the top of the hour break, correct? Anybody in the chat room? Nobody heard anything since the top of the hour break. Is that correct? Yeah, correct. Okay. Thanks, Kel. Okay. So here's where I was starting, and we'll try to get this real quick. I'll have to do a bridge version. Just, this first one's an important story in so much as this is what passes for science on the left. According to the World Health Organization, playing video games too much is now officially a mental disorder. However, they are making a change and they're taking transgenderism off of the list of mental disorders. According to the World Health Organization, excessive gaming may now be a mental disorder. In the new draft of the HWO's 11th International Classification of Diseases, which is set to be released early this coming year, gaming disorder will now officially be listed. The syndromes include quote, impaired control over gaming, which means you prioritize gaming over everything else, as well as playing video games over, quote, other life interests and daily activities, resulting in, air quotes here, the occurrence of negative consequences. So even if you know you're going to get in trouble, you're going to do it anyway. In fact, the World Health Organization's draft reads as follows. The behavior pattern is of sufficient severity to result in significant impairment in personal, family, social, educational, occupational, and other important areas of functioning. The gaming behavior and other features are normally evident over a period of at least 12 months in order for a diagnosis to be assigned, although the required duration may be short. Hold on, blah, 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 blah. Enunciation is important in the radio. May be shortened if all diagnostic requirements are met and symptoms are severe. Translation? We're going to say that we really shouldn't diagnose this unless we've been watching this behavior for at least 12 months. However, if somebody pays us enough money, we as medical professionals will tell them that, yes, their child is in fact suffering from this disorder. You know, if it's just a couple of weeks, you were just obsessed over a new game. If it's a couple of months, then you're just trying to escape reality. If it's over a year, though, then you have a mental problem. But we're still open to shortening that time period. So, yeah, the very condition of gaming excessively is now officially a disorder, according to the World Health Organization. But don't worry. If you happen to be a transgender gamer, then you only have one mental disorder. Congratulations, just gaming. Because by 2018, the World Health Organization is expected to declassify transgenderism as a mental disorder. In fact, according to a report posted last year from the Washington Post, and I quote, the proposals to declassify transgender identity as a mental disorder have been approved by each committee that has considered it so far. Transgender activist groups have been working towards this for years, and it looks like they're finally getting their wish. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Believe it. It is true. Gaming, to the extent that you prioritize playing video games over other life interests, will be internationally recognized as a diagnosable mental illness. But believing that you're a member of the opposite sex, well, that's not a mental disorder at all. In fact, the only reason you'd be impaired by that condition is if society is mean to you. You know, despite the fact of a lifetime of suicide attempts, rating anywhere from 4 to 10 among transgender people, 4 to 10 attempts to commit suicide if you're never successful. And the fact that nearly 40% of transgender adults have attempted suicide or committed suicide at some point or another. That's only because us mean people in society. And is it any wonder that the scientific community is still surprised why lay people like, you know, you and me, while we don't really take their completely anti-scientific redefinition of mental illness too seriously, they've lost their ever-loving minds. That's where we're at. Sorry, it took a minute to peek in the chat room. Another story that I really wanted to get to. And, Mary's right. It really won't change anything. But at the end of the day, the fact that these people are supposed to be the professionals, the scientists, the people that are helping us through our issues, when they clearly have issues of their own. These are also the same people that are working hard to try and classify pedophilia as just another preference. You know, you got the straight folks, you got the gay folks, you got the bi folks, and now you have the pedophiles. It's all the same. Only it's not. this is one of the things we're going to have to keep an eye on. We're going to have to continue to fight the culture war on points like this, because transgender folks generally are people that need help. This isn't said from a place of social superiority or a place of hate or phobia. It's said from a place of love. It's said from a place of wanting what's best for everyone. When I've had Walt Hollier on here before, we've discussed the simple fact that the instant somebody now says they think they're transgender, there are places in this country where if they were seeing someone, a psychologist or a psychiatrist, they were seeing them before, the second they utter the phrase, "I think I might be transgender," they're no longer allowed to try and treat them for the gender dysphoria. They have to just accept it by law, or they face losing their licenses. When in my mind, it should be pretty clear that they should lose their license for not helping these people. This is a drastic cry for help, and it's a social justice issue. Another story that's kind of sort of related, well, not really, but kind of sort of. And now I won't get to all of them because of the freaking 40-minute gap in programming. Thanks, BTR. But this is one that I'm sure you've heard of by now, but it's kind of sticking in my crawl. So I've got to talk about it a little bit. Seems that there are two professors that are calling on their colleagues to adopt a social justice agenda. Big surprise there, right? But this is a way of combating classroom microaggressions. And you guys know how I feel about the word microaggressions. Bottom line is, if you're concerned about a microaggression, you've not faced real racism. If you're concerned about a microaggression, you've not faced real discrimination. If you're worried about a microaggression, you've not faced any real aggression, because there is nothing micro about actual aggression. But this is a way of trying to combat classroom microaggressions, which is an actual thing that has been well defined now within collegiate classrooms. But one of the recommendations to fight this calls for students to wear name badges. Here, put this little "Hello, my name is" sticker on. That's going to include your preferred gender pronoun. And you're supposed to wear this throughout the semester to avoid being mislabeled from the first day. Now, what about for the gender fluid people? Well, that's why you actually shouldn't have one name badge, but you'd get it every day. Every time you come to class, you should get one. See, they haven't thought this part out. Because for the gender fluid folks, well, today I prefer he, but tomorrow I prefer Z. Whatever. It's insanity, and it's just playtime. One more thing for kids to do in a college class other than learn something. That's really what it comes down to. But according to them, professors should promote dialogue, not debate, during class to prevent students from committing microaggressions, at least according to these two New England professors. Now, of course, they want dialogue and not debate. Debate means that you are putting your ideas up to scrutiny. Debate means that you are actually competing in the space of ideas. This isn't really on the marketplace of ideas, but you're in the arena of ideas. And they know they typically lose these kind of arguments when there's actually an exchange. So they want to have discussion. They want to have dialogue, not debate. In the latest issue of the Journal of Teaching and Social Work, New York professor Justin Lerner and Simmons College professor, some name I can't pronounce, both urged their colleagues to cultivate a space free from microaggressions by adopting a social justice agenda in class. And in an effort to rid classrooms of microaggressions, their very first recommendation for professors involves requiring students to wear name cards with gender pronouns so that students can avoid being mislabeled from the first day. Each week, for the entirety of the semester, students should wear these name tags, which also may help the instructors take attendance by picking up the name tags at the end of class each week. All right, now, first of all, I've not run into very many college professors that really care who's in their class and who isn't. They just have their class. And if you're a smart kid, you'll show up for the class. If you're in some crazy class where, you know, classroom lectures really aren't going to be the material covered on your test, then you just stay in your dorm and study from the source materials where the test's going to come from. That's what smart kids are going to do. Only social justice warriors are going to show up for something like this. But again, I say, guys, professors, why isn't every day? Because again, you're completely ignoring gender fluidity. Why, professor? Why would you ignore gender fluidity? Come on. Some days you feel like a guy, sometimes a little less. Anyway, after students create their name cards, the professors in question urge other professors to establish group guidelines so that students' comfort is kept in mind. Oh, no, we want you to be comfortable. We don't want you to be challenged by new ideas and new concepts. We don't want you to be uncomfortable as you learn something maybe you didn't know before. No, we want you to be comfortable. So we want to make sure that the rules keep everyone's comfort in mind. The principle of dialogue, not debate, is one of the most important guidelines, according to these two. Dialogue, not debate. Dialogue, not debate. Well, as you see, debate, even they say, involves one person proving the other person wrong or trying to prove themselves to be right. Of course, this is a zero-sum game. Well, of course, they think it's a zero-sum game because they're not going to accept you proving them wrong. And they know most likely they're actually going to prove you wrong. Because students that have a conservative mindset tend to rely on logic and facts and information. And feelings don't hold up well in debate. Thought, logic, facts, those hold up well in debate. That's not the arena that these leftists want to compete in. So it's a zero-sum game for them because they're not going to accept your evidence regardless. Furthermore, the professors warn that debaters often are not actually trying to have meaningful conversations and promote stimulating dialogue, but rather they're just trying to prove their opponent to be wrong at all costs, and thus conclude that debate has no place in the classroom. What a surprise. Again, I don't want you to debate. So, to prevent certain students from monopolizing class discussions, and let's be clear, when they say certain students, they're talking about conservative students that are going to use facts and information and logic to convey their viewpoint. We don't want them monopolized. And we know it's the conservatives because they don't care if it's a leftist snowflake that's monopolizing the discussion. They don't care at all. If they did care about that, we would have never gotten to the place where students are demanding safe spaces on college campuses, would we? So when they say trying to prevent certain students from monopolizing class discussions, they are clearly talking about conservative ideology. So in order to prevent that, they also urge professors to make a habit of calling upon certain students to move in or move out of the discussions, explaining that the terms move in and move out are generally an effort to avoid stronger or harsher language of like step in or step out. That seems more aggressive. Step in, you step out. I want you to move in. You just kind of move out and we'll let this student move in. No matter how you cut that, no matter how you phrase that, that's still the professor saying, I don't like how the conversation's going, so I'm going to tell you to shut the hell up. And agree with what I agree with, so you can start talking. That's what that is. You know, and I'm out of time now. Again, thank you, BTR, for taking 40 minutes of my show away. but anyway, those are two of the bigger stories I think we need to talk about right now that we'll need to move forward with. In the meanwhile, thank you all for being here. COG, Bigfoot, Bob, Kel, Mary. May you guys enjoy the blessings of a prosperous and happy new year. as we move forward together. Thank you. Everybody else who's listening after the fact, thank you as well. Appreciate you taking the time to be here. And remember, do not take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in a little bit of effort and to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. That's going to be it for me. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for staying with. And one more time, I'm going to play Miracle. And this will be the last show of the year, of course. Next year, to our regular schedule. For those of you who know Cash Easlow personally, some of you have started following him on social media. He lost a family pet that was very meaningful to the family recently. So thoughts for him, but this is his song, Miracle. God bless, and I will see you guys soon.